wonderful team. I'm part of a team, of the missions team. We're a group of people from Country Hills who love missions, who love the Lord. And missions looks very different than it did years ago because several of our missionaries we support are actually right here in Canada. You may be doing missions every single day and not even realize that you're doing missions every single day. It's what's in your heart and what you're sharing if you're sharing Christ with others. I have been privileged to be part of several missions trips to Peru with my dear friend Pat Carlson and her husband Eric, and that's who I'm going to be welcoming in just a moment to speak with us this morning. There are people who do missions here at home, but there are also people who have a real heart for missions in certain parts of the world, and that's who Pat and Eric are. They have for many, many years poured their hearts out to missions in Peru specifically. I was part of three trips into the jungles of Peru, and that's quite an experience. And I was able to travel with Pat, and for 10 years she actually did that. And what would you say, Pat, because you and I were born in the same year, I'm not telling you which one, but there's a certain time in your life where you just can't do the, you know, the dugout canoes into the jungle anymore. But that does not stop us from doing missions. It's got to be in your heart. And many of you have supported the missions in Peru, financially, fundraisers. And so it is my great privilege this morning to welcome Pat and Eric Carlson, and they will share with you what their mission story looks like now. Welcome them, please.
Now, John shared last week, he said, you know, this is going to be a different kind of message, and I don't think John's here today, and I wanted to tell him what an amazing message it was last week on the book of Hosea. I love the history, and he shared it so in such a real way. So this will be a little different for you, too. So we, as Norma said, we spent actually a total of, I think, 12 years total. This was our 12th year in Peru. And there does come a time in your life when you say, I can't get into the dugout canoe anymore. And I found I could get down, but the bigger issue was I couldn't get up. And so the last year we did the jungle, which was 2 years ago. My orthopedic surgeon said to me in January, promise me you will not get into a dugout canoe. Okay, so... But there does come a time in your life where you look at some of the rigors, and it's hard for those of you that have reached that certain age to recognize that in your heart, in my heart, I'm still 29, but in my body, I'm not. I'm much beyond that. So there came an opportunity when I was training a new medical team a year ago, February, in working with Alex, who's the pastor that we work with in Lima. Some of you have had the opportunity to meet Alex, and certainly you've heard us say that name. It should be familiar to you after 10 years of Peru. Alex approached me on two things. One, he kept saying, I would love Eric to come down and talk about money with my people and train my leaders, my church leaders. And I was like, oh, okay. And Eric is very gifted. You'll learn some things about our marriage. We're going to be really pretty open with you about some of the things we shared in Peru. You're going to learn some things about us that maybe we don't always like to share at home. But I thought, oh, okay, we could do that. And it really worked out this year that we couldn't go with the medical team. I desperately wanted to go with the Bethany medical team and work with them, and the dates just didn't work for us. And we really took that as a message that really wasn't where God wanted us anymore. And so we agreed to go down and spend 10 days in Lima and talk about money. And I thought, woohoo, I'll get to go down and not lead a team and not, you know, I'll be able to relax, maybe do some women's ministry, maybe do some fun things with the women's groups. And Alex wrote and he said, no, Pat, I want you to talk about communication and marriage and sex. And I'm like, I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a, But we took on the challenge, and we said, okay, God, if that's what you're calling us to, then where do we go from here? And my first, our first look, of course, was a whole lot of prayer into it. And then it was, wow, where do I go for materials? And Jeremy said to us, when he asked us to take the whole message time today, would just to make sure we left you with a takeaway. So if I don't leave you with any other takeaway, let me leave you with this. We have an amazing library downstairs. And I don't even think Pauline is here. Is she? No. There. Oh, but Pauline has done an incredible job with that library. And I think, Judith, you're involved there as well. And I and anybody else that I don't know that's there, let me tell you something. I went online. Jeremy sent me a link. And I went online, and I put in some search words, and I came up with almost every book in our library, which was incredibly large number, of things on marriage and communication. And then Pauline helped me hunt down some books, and I went home one Sunday with about 15 books and literally was overwhelmed with it. Prayed over it, started, picked up one book at a time and got one chapter into it and went, oof, this is not it. And I must have gone through 10 books before I picked up a little set of books called For Men Only, For Women Only. It's a set of books. I don't care how far along you are in your marriage. We've been married 34 years. There's something to learn in those little books, let me tell you. They are easy reading. They are done. They are written by Shanti and Jeff Felton. And I would encourage you, at any stage of your marriage or for anyone that's engaged, to get those books. They are an incredible resource and a lot of great information. They're not thick. They're not big. They're very easy reading. And Eric can vouch for that because I actually made him read one, and he doesn't read. After 34 years of marriage, I read through the book called For Women Only, and I knew right away that this was the book we were going to, these were the books we were going to work with. And I had several aha moments. I was actually out west working, and Eric was at home, and I said to him, this is your job while I'm away. You have to read this book. You have to make notes, because your job is to speak to the men. And he can tell you his moments on that. But we broke down the materials, and then it was all about money. And Eric really took over the leadership on the money portion, and you'll understand why when we share some of that for you. And then the other big aha moment for us was when we arrived in Peru. For anyone who's been with us, we often fly by the seat of our pants down there, and things change on a dime. So we arrived at 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning, and we got to bed, we got up, we had breakfast with everybody, and 3 hours later, Alex says, you know, you are preaching tonight, right? And I was like, what? Eric goes, did you know that? No, I didn't. And it was Mother's Day weekend, and for anybody who knows Latin America, Mother's Day is bigger than Christmas. It is the day of the year. It's huge. And they had this, they were doing it Saturday night, and it was like a wedding. The church was decorated. There were tablecloths and chair covers, and oh my goodness, it was over the top. And then we were expected to bring the message. So we are actually going to bring you an abbreviated, you'll be thankful and abbreviated, portion of that message at the end, but we're going to share a few other things with you first. So we spoke in 10 different settings throughout Lima and a town called Huacho, which is 2 hours north of Lima on the coast in the desert region of Peru. And we just got in the car, and when the car stopped, we got out and we shared what God laid on our hearts to share. We had several topics, and we would say to Alex, which ones are we highlighting today? So depending on where we were, and so we were in some very poor squatters areas, so we didn't talk about budgeting and finance too much. We focused more on communication and marriage and different aspects of that. We always worked with some very skilled translators. We had one night with the Christian Motorcycle Association, and that was quite an experience. So we arrived at San Martin with Alex's team, who are members of the Christian Motorcycle Association, for those of you that may not be familiar with them. They are a very, very large American organization based out of Arkansas, as Alex calls it. And I, Arkansas. And I said, oh, Arkansas, Alex. But anyway, they are based in Arkansas. And they provide hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to mission organizations around the world to purchase bicycles and motorcycles so that pastors and church leaders can reach the outlying areas. And one of those, one of the big areas of their ministry is in Peru. And Alex and George Cortrina had that ministry. So a large number of Alex's church leaders are members of the Christian Motorcycle Association. So we arrived at San Martin Church, and there's always a very large placard on the San Martin Church. It's their logo, and it's, you know, it's the backflash on their leather jackets, and it's this beautiful cross and the crown and rays of light, and it was wonderful. And then the Pirates of the Road arrived, and we were just like, oh, with the studs and the black leather and the bandanas. They were called the Pirates of the Road. And their logo wasn't quite as pretty, but we found out that the Christian Motorcycle Association leader had invited four other bike groups from across bike clubs, I use the term loosely, from across Lima to come and listen to us. So we had a church full of leather-bound, bandanaed, spikes guys. And we were there to talk about marriage and communication and the five love languages. And I'll tell you, I don't get nervous too often. I speak a lot in my job, and it's very sad that, you know, I don't mind taking the microphone talking in front of people. It's actually kind of embarrassing that I actually like that. But I was a little like, oh, you know, and the whole time we were like, oh, Lord, like just, you know, these are men that don't know the Lord. And how do we portray what we're trying to share with them? They listened very attentively. There were only three women in the group. We closed, we finished every session doing about 45 minutes to an hour on the five love languages. And we had the book in Spanish. We had the questionnaire in Spanish. We talked about the five love languages and everything else. And you know what? They listened very attentively. They're not very responsive. Men aren't in general. And so we didn't get much facial feedback or verbal feedback, and we just plowed on through. But I'll tell you, every one of them sat with their little pencil stub. And we're taking, some of them were writing notes on their hands, and but they all did the five love languages. And it was really fun to walk around. And we said to them, you know, if you have a wife or a spouse, partner, that you'd like to pick up the questionnaire and you want to know what your partner's love language is, there's extras up here. And so many of them, when they thought we weren't looking, snuck up to snitch one and tuck it away. And it was really fun. And at the end of it, we were sitting with the group that we knew, of course, having coffee. And Alex, or George, comes running. George is about this big, and he was an actor, and he's very animated, and he comes up and he goes, pot, they're all talking about what you in New York said. And I said, oh, is that good? He goes, yeah, it's great. Out of that came four requests for us to go to each of the non-Christian bike clubs. And so each of the presidents were over talking to Alex, and, you know, you hear all this. And, you know, Latin America, Americans are very animated, and they're, and I thought, ooh, we did something wrong. And Alex said, I was telling them, I can't bring the Canadians. You're only here till next Sunday. We only went down for 10 days. And they were, all four clubs were asking, you know what, and it wasn't because we were delivered. They were so hungry for the message that we were giving. And what we were giving was very simple, as you're going to see. But we were overwhelmed with the impact of what we would perceive as a very simple message around finance and money and marriage, what we perceived as very simple messages. And when we first went down, we thought, like, really, this is this is what we're doing, okay. And we knew walking away 10 days later that this is our new journey. This is indeed what God has called us to. Marriage is not, in Latin America, family and marriage is not what we perceive it here. And they are so hungry to understand how to be better parents and how to be better with their finances and what to do. And so we have a whole new journey. And so a lot of it we're going to be doing, just the two of us, but we do understand that there are sometimes other couples that we want to take. We've decided that we will take only one other couple with us at a time for a very purposed reason. If there's something very specific, we actually have approached the couple as Alex was talking to us on the last day with his vision of videos and big conferences. We were just like deer in the headlights. Okay. We have actually a couple's name came to me, not a couple I would have even thought of, but so I knew it was from the Lord, and we really prayed about it, and we've approached them and asked them to pray about it and go with us for very specific reasons next year. So I'm going to let Eric, he's like, well, I'm just standing here looking handsome. So this is what we did. We started with, we had large groups. We had anywhere from 150 to 30 people in a living room. That we had lots of add-on things. We'd kind of show up, go up to somebody's living room, there'd be 30 people there, and we would just say, okay, here we are, and we would launch into it. And I'm going to let Eric take it from here for the next section.
I would encourage, especially the men, to read that book, For Men Only. Again, as Pat said, is how long you've been in a relationship or how little relationship. Guys, you're going to sit and you're going to read that thing and you're going to say, now that explains it. Now I understand. And it's just written in such a way that you're thinking, oh, as I say, is Pat and I have a really good relationship. And you're thinking, now I understand why they think this way. And it's not wrong. It's just that we have to understand we're different and we need to understand. And with regards to the relationships down in Peru, they don't necessarily talk about their relationships. They don't really talk about money. And that was a huge thing that Alex was wanting us to talk about. So it was really interesting when there was this time delay, because when we talked to the audience, then there's a delay, then it gets translated. Then we're specifically looking at expressions and hands and gestures and that kind of stuff to find out whether or not we're actually connecting and making sense. There's no budgeting down there. And with regards to the money that they spend, we spend money on coffee all the time. They spend money on soda. And if you start tallying it up, how much you do every day on a regular basis, it comes up to a fair amount of money. And like so many households, there's never enough money, and there's 2 months, too much month left. But we really got them to think about budgeting. And so one of the things that we have in mind is we've got 5 presentations that we can do right now, but what Pat and I are going to do is maybe ramp that up to about 10, so that when we go down and we're in Peru, Alex knows the people, what the organization, the church, whatever it is, their economic situation happens to be. But we'd like to be able to say, here's 10 presentations. Which are the ones that are going to have the biggest impact on this group? Because we always want to provide information and provide things that's going to provide benefits. Budgeting, that's one of the biggest things that we're going to go down, and we're going to rip apart that, and we're going to outline it, and we're going to be doing a lot of teaching with regards to that, so that they in turn can teach their own people with regards to budgeting. One of the things that we found out was when we were walking by, and we walked by a church, or we walked by a bank, and of course my eyes kind of peeled out. The bank is absolutely packed. And there's lineup of about 35 people outside the bank. Now, I don't know if there's a sale on or what's going on to bring them all in. I said to Alex, I said, what's going on with regards to the bank? And he's flipping around on his phone for a minute, and he says, they're in, because this is the middle of the month, he says, they're in getting short-term loans to get them to the end of the month. As bad as that is, the average interest rate on a short-term loan in Peru is 125% per year. So we really need to sit down and talk with individuals to say, if you're not in debt, you're not going in debt, and here's the reasons why. And then we've got some serious work to do with regards to those individuals who are on that wheel at the moment, is you're going to have short-term pain here, but we got to get you off it, because it's just going to destroy your life. And the two biggest things for destroying marriages is going to be finances and sex. And so we really need to talk about where the money is going and spending. And again, when we're talking about things like that, it was really interesting to see the spouses, and they're leaning over. Now they're talking. And that, to me, is huge. We talked about financial personalities, and everybody's got one. But the other thing is we need to actually understand our partner and who it is. So I'm just going to throw this out to you right at the moment, but don't acknowledge this, don't have to. In your relationship, who's the spender? Who's the saver? Who's the risk taker? This is interesting to actually, you know, when you're looking at the Peruvians about acknowledgement, and they're kind of pointing out this way. Who's the debtor? Who doesn't mind going and taking a loan out for this? That risk taker, who says, let's go for it? And then who's the individual who says, hang on for a second, let's just talk about this and let's think about this a little bit. And who's the flyer who doesn't really, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll deal with it next month. You know, we'll deal with it in the fall, and we'll let it go around. And, you know, as Pat subtly disclosed just a few moments ago, I'm more of a saver, and she's more of a spender. I love her. I don't want to change her. But she needs to know that I'm a saver. She needs to know that we've got money set aside for whatever, whether or not it's taxes, or whether or not it's trips, or whether or not it's vacations, whether or not it's for emergencies. She needs to understand that. But I also need to know that she's a spender, and that, and again, I don't want to change her, but if we understand each other, and so many, and that seems to be the most common things, there's a saver and a spender, that creates or can create a lot of problems in your relationship. If you don't deal with it, that problem never goes away. So we're seeing some interaction going on with regards to the Peruvians, and then we find out, and I said, well, one of the simple solutions with regards to that is when you get paid, you get an allowance. Because we all need to get some type of an encouragement for when we put our, when we go to work each day, each week. And we need to have, so we get an allowance. You know, and you could see some, you know, so I said, so what we do, and we personally have an allowance on the paydays. What we have is fair. So again, getting back into especially the relationships in Peru, Pat gets more money than I get. But it's fair. Because at the end of the day, when I look at a woman and I say, how much is your blouse? And then when I look at the gentleman and I say, how much is your shirt? It's not right, but it's reality. How much is your haircut? And then I look at the lady and say, how much is your haircut? Hers is more. It's not right, but that's reality. I don't spend a lot on makeup. Pat does, but she feels good. She looks great, and you want to have your spouse do that. She gets more money than I do, but it's fair. And seeing the relationship down there with the women and the man down in Peru is like, thank goodness the women are saying, thank goodness he's saying that out loud so he understands, but he needs to understand that, you know, getting equal allowance is not necessarily fair. It's just the way the world happens to be. So getting, again, the relationships to talk to each other, that to me is a huge thing. So we just need to work out, and we need to understand what our partner's financial personality happens to be, and then you can work with it. Because when we get paid our allowance, Pat can use it for whatever she wants. I can use whatever I want, but we know that everything else is being looked after with regards to all the other needs, so it's not an expense. Because part of the thing at the beginning was Pat would spend too much, and I'd get concerned, I'd get worried, I'd get quiet, as most men do. But she doesn't know whether or not $50 is too much, $100 is too much. But when we come up with a budget and we come up with an allowance, and that's part of the budget, everybody gets what they need, and everybody gets to understand each other.
So, TMI. It really helps. Part of the Latin American culture is about storytelling and about sharing. And so a lot of the ways to make an impact for them was to share a lot of our personal stories, and some of them were tough to share. We've had 34 years, but if for all of you that have been married more than a couple of weeks, you know that marriage is work. And so finances has always been, was in the early part of our marriage, and a struggle, simply because of that recognition of our personalities and what happened. But we actually get to retire in a couple of years because I got a good man here. So when we're giving you very abbreviated portions of what we talked about, so you can be relieved for that. So that led us down the road to communication, and this led us into the discussion around how men and women think differently. And we had a lot of fun with this with the Latin Americans, mostly around trying to make it more meaningful. But let's face it, men and women think differently. Women think and talk at the same time. Men think or talk, and sometimes they don't do either, but they never do it at the same time. And so trying to communicate that and helping them to understand, that's just the way our brains work. I don't know if any of you are on Facebook or have had the opportunity to see some of the YouTube TED Talks on some of the psychologists that talk about the men's brain versus the women's brain. That really is true. You know, women's brains are like, you know, we got 10 things going on at the same time, and I sometimes barely finish a sentence before I'm on to the next one, and I'll say something randomly because I have 10 things going on in my head, and it makes sense to me that I suddenly say this sentence, and Eric will say to me, what? What are you talking about? And so that's just the way our brains are. And even yesterday, we'd finished dinner on the deck, and I turned to him. I said, well, what are you thinking about? Which is now a joke with us because we know men can think about nothing. Nothing. Yeah. And he looked at me, he goes, nothing. I said, I hate you. Because I can't shut my brain off. And that's just the difference between women's brains and men's brains. So what we took is we had a little bit of fun with that at the beginning. We talked about it. But at the end of the day, what did that mean when we were really explaining in terms of the impact that has in our ability or our inability to communicate with one another? And that is, we need to learn two things about each other. So very abbreviated format is that women, we have to learn to know to when to stop talking. And so when our spouses come home and we're full of all this stuff from the day, and how did your day go? And it's like, and then I want to say to him, so what do you think? And he's just looking at me like, I just walked in the door. I just asked, how was your day? And I went on for, 15 minutes, and then I want to know what he thinks. Well, he doesn't know what he thinks because he hasn't had time to think what he thinks. Men need time to think what they think. And we do no service to them when we follow them from room to room and continue to do this, which is what a lot of women do, and I fall into that bracket too. And, you know, we continue to follow them. And we're like, well, you know, tell me, like, and how was your day? And how was this? And what happened here? And, you know, and they're like, whoa, I just walked in the door. Could I just... Men need that time to just... And then they'll come and tell you what you think, what they think. But on the flip side of that, our message to the men was, guys, if you say you're going to go and think about it, then you go and think about it and come back with an answer. Because if you don't do that...
They will never forget.
Women don't forget. And the next time I come at you with, nee, 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 and you say to me, oh, okay, let me think about that. I'm not going to let you think about it. I want an answer now because I know you're not going to think about it. Does that make sense to you? That's a very abbreviated form of what we were discussing around communication, and we branched out more into really the openness. Communication played a part in everything that we were talking about in terms of money, in terms of budget, in terms of finance, in terms of who spends the money, who saves the money, who controls the money, and in Latin America, a lot of that is the men. So this was a whole new way of thinking for the men down there, just the concept of the women having to ask all the time for money. And in marriage, that's not an equality. So I don't know for anybody here that manages their money that way. I would suggest that you might want to rethink that. For those of you who are in homes where, you know, the little woman stays home and manages the house, I hate to tell you, most of us wished we'd gone back to work. That is a lot of work to stay home, raise children, and I think one of the most insulting things anyone said to me when I was home with three children was, oh, you just stay at home. Wow. And it's a lot of work, and it's not a salaried job. It's a labor of love. But for that mom to have to go to her husband and ask for money all the time is humbling. And we should not, men, put our wives in that position. Put your wives in that position. So just a thought for you. So that was one of the concepts that we also spoke quite a bit about, is how to share the money and how to manage the money. And then we went on to, so we did a whole lot more on communication. You have to understand, too, we were working with a translator, so everything we said, we had to wait till it was translated. And after about four times, for anybody that knows Alex, he would just go on and on and on, and I would say there, and I'd turn to Eric and say, I don't think that's what I said. But we did have a tremendous amount of fun with it, and as Alex got used to what we were talking about, he could expound more too on ministry, and knowing his own people could expound a bit more on it specifically. So we did, each session was 2 to 3 hours. So please, we're not staying 2 to 3 hours. You're good. You're safe. And when we always ended with the 5 love languages. And again, this is something I would truly encourage you to look at. If you have not done the 5 love languages with your partner, your spouse, it is eye-opening to look at what your love language is and how we often love our partner according to our own love language and not what their love language is. And we spent a fair bit of time with this, particularly with a large group of pastors. We had about 30 pastors, elders, and partners over 2 days, and we spent a considerable amount of time on the 5 love languages with them. And I just want to share one story, which was kind of amusing. It was a young couple. They'd been married for a year, and they bought a new motorcycle, and he actually had a fall off the motorcycle and had skinned road rash on his arm quite badly. Was at the clinic. They told him to, you know, what cream to use and, you know, everything else. So he sends his wife. He's in pain, he's in bed. And Ginny went off to the pharmacy and comes back with a tube of cream. And she sets it on the table and she said, there you go, I got a really good one for you. Here you go. Well, he's upset with her and she can't figure out why. And so then she was mad at him And he couldn't figure out why. And we did the five love languages, and the two of them were sitting in the corner, and they were laughing so hard and talking to each other, and they finally shared the story with us. Her love language is gifts. And she went to the pharmacy, and she bought him the best cream, the most expensive cream, and she brought it home to him, and that was her gift to him. She paid for it with her own money, and that was her gift to him. That was her gift. And his love language is touch. And he was upset and hurt because she didn't put the cream on for him. And it was just one of the many, many stories that came out that was kind of fun to see the response. And it was really cute with our motorcycle gangs to look at how many of them, their love language was touch. And it was in quality time. That was another big one. Mine is acts of service. So I would say nothing makes me happier than when I've been traveling for a week and I come home Friday night. Nothing says I love you like the floors are washed and the bathrooms are cleaned. That's my love language. So we had just a lot of fun with that. So we're just going to share with you now. When Alex said to us, you're preaching tonight, and we had a panic attack, I went and we kind of holed up in the bedroom and thought, oh, Lord, what will we talk about? What can we pull that will be of value? And we decided to share five things that we've learned as a couple but as parents, and five things that we wanted to share with them. And a couple of things came out of this in the churches that I can share with you at the end. But the first one thing that we've learned is every child is a gift, and every child is gifted. Children don't always come when we want them. And sometimes they come unexpectedly, and sometimes they come as planned. But whether we want them or not, or in the order we think we want them. I thought the ideal family was a boy and a girl. Somebody else's might be two boys. We had two boys and a girl, and I wouldn't change that for anything. They don't always come as we want them. I've watched many young couples be disappointed to find out they're having a third boy or a fourth boy. Every child is a gift, regardless of when they come or how they come. The Bible speaks so often of God's great love for children and of how Christ loved children. The reference is if we don't become as a small child with that understanding and that sense of awe and wonder before him. Jesus said, "Let the children come to me." He loved children. God loves children. He has given you that child to parent. In whatever time frame, or however that child arrived to you, that child is your gift. It's your job, then, to find out the gift of that child. Every child is gifted. One of the worst things we can do to any one of our children is to compare them with someone else. We hear that a lot. We heard it a lot we had two boys 2 years apart. Ryan is very much like me, more outgoing. You know, he'll take the microphone, talk to anybody. He'll strike up a conversation. He's very gregarious. And then we had Craig, who is very much like me in every part of his life except that same little piece of his personality. He's very much like the Carlson and Robbie side of the family. He's very reserved. He's very, you know, introverted. And we would hear so often, oh, well, he's not like Ryan. Well, no, he's not like Ryan, he's Craig. Every child is different. Don't allow your children to be compared to one another. Don't do it yourself, don't allow teachers to do it. Certainly not in front of them. It belittles who they are as an individual. I think one of the worst things we do in the church is we compare our children to the pastor's kids. And I think Jeremy and Steph aren't here, but I think we're pretty safe to say that doesn't happen too much here. One thing I've come very much to appreciate about Jeremy and Stephanie and their kids is they're very real, and what you see is what you get. And they're very open and transparent about their family and their children, and I think that that is a tremendous gift to us as a church family, that they are who they are in terms of parenting. My point here is that our job as parents is to find that gift within each child and to nurture that specifically. One of the things we did here then was we shared some of the stories of our own children and some of the things we did right, and we shared a lot of the things we did wrong when we were there. And our message very much was, we're not here because we got it all right. We're here because we've learned some very hard lessons. And because lots of things we got wrong, and we learned the hard way. So every child is a gift. What is your child's gift? And what are you doing to nurture it?
Give your children something greater than money. Give them your time. Our children won't remember what they did nearly as much as what we did with them. I've never heard anyone complain. My parents were always around, but I never had enough material possessions. I've heard lots of times where they've got lots of stuff, but my parents were never there. It was so interesting when I used to teach or used to coach soccer, and you'd go out onto a soccer field and you'd see if the two teams lined up on the two sides and one's got 40 parents and the other one's got 6, and you knew which team was going to win. You need to be there. The best things you can do for your kids is put them on your appointment calendar. Cancel things. Make time with them. Work hard, but don't work such long hours that you miss that brief opportunity, because it is so brief, to shape your children for their eternity. No man ever looks back and says, I wish I spent more time at the office and less time with my children. Use life's teachable moments to train your children. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Proverbs 22:6. Deuteronomy 6:6-9 tells us to impress God's commands on our children and talk about them when you sit at home and when you're walking along the road. When we're alert, life brings countless of opportunities to teach our children of the eternal perspective on life, money, and possessions. Teach them values. When they are young, teach them the values that you want to see when they're teenagers and adults. If their actions or words are not funny and appropriate when they're 10 and 12, they shouldn't be funny and appropriate when they're 2 and 3. Take a field trip to a junkyard. How can we teach children about the emptiness of materialism in a memorable way? Take them to visit a dump. Show them all the piles of treasures that were formerly Christmas and birthday presents. Point out the things costing hundreds of dollars that the children quarreled about. Friendships were lost over. Honesty and sacrificed for. Marriages were broken up over them. Show them the remnants of battered dolls and rusty toys and deadbeat cars. Let them look at the expensive furniture and electronic gadgets we just throw away because they're useless. Point out to them that nearly everything your family owns will one day end up in the junkyard.
We're always parents. We have adult children, 32, 30, and 26. We worked hard to nurture a relationship with our children, and I do think it's something we did well as parents. And I think one of the ways we did it well, because we didn't have money for anything else when our children were little. We didn't have money to buy the gadgets and to do a lot of the extra things. We often sit on the deck now as with them as adults, and we kind of look back and laugh about those times. They weren't funny at the time. They were difficult, and we made some difficult decisions. And, you know, the one time we talked about not being able to afford the $100 bike at Walmart for Craig's 11th birthday. And that was a big deal to me. We had bought Ryan, you know, a brand new bike for his 11th birthday, and this Craig was looking forward to having a brand new bike, and we didn't have $100. We didn't have it. And he ended up with a used bike, and now he looks back on that. And at the time, he was not disappointed. He did get a nice bike, but it was used. And he looks back on that now, and he said, "Oh my gosh," he said, "that was the most amazing bike. It was," he said, "oh, I remember, you know, Uncle Ron fixed it up and did this for me and did that for me." So we didn't have time. We didn't have money to buy a lot of the expensive kids' things. Our kids didn't have a Nintendo or an Atari because we couldn't afford it. But we spent a lot of time with our kids, and I think it's the one thing we got right. We sat with our kids every night for dinner. That was something we were both raised with, and we did. I think it's an important part. It's very hard these days. It grew more difficult as our children, especially the boys, got older and they got into part-time jobs. But the one thing we did was we would set one or two nights a week as family dinner nights. And as they got into university, Monday night seemed to be the night. And I made sure that regardless of what was happening at work, I was home to make dinner on Monday. Because our kids, our boys, right through university to age 20, 22, 23, would say, "Monday night is family dinner night, right? Like, you're still going to be here. We're going to have dinner together, right?" "Yes, we are." I don't think we appreciate how important those times together are for our children and what it means to gather around the table together. We had kind of an open door policy. So in the home we're in right now, when we moved to Kitchener 17 years ago, we were really blessed to be able to purchase the home we have. And we used to leave the downstairs for the kids. We always seemed to be the magnet for our kids' friends. Everybody was at our house. And we would... Eric and I would go upstairs. We have a huge bedroom, 12 by 22 feet, and we had a TV there. And we'd curl up, sit on the bed. We love our bed. We'd sit on the bed. We'd read. I'd read. It wasn't great. He'd look at some financial records. But, you know, we'd spend time up there. And next thing you know, the kids would wander upstairs, maybe Lily with her best friend, and they'd all sit on the end of the bed, and they'd have some big discussion with us. And then, you know, then Craig and one of his friends would come up. And, you know, right into university and right till our kids left home, we'd have the lights out and there'd be a little tap on the door. And we'd say, "Yeah, come on in." And it would be one of the kids coming in to share, even if it was a highlight of their day or, "I'm home, how was your day? This is what happened. I'm struggling with this." And the end of our bed was the sitting place. And...
What's really awesome now is our kids' friends come to our house. That's awesome.
Our kids live all over the world right now. This past Christmas, they were all home. And one night, they were all on our bed. Everybody, partners, spouses, and a grandchild.
And a dog.
And a dog. All talking. Nobody wanted to stay down in the living room. Everybody had to be up on the bed. Those are amazing times, guys. For those of you with small children, cherish those times. They will come back to you. You are always a parent. As adults, our children still call us. I think the worst calls we get are the crying ones. For anybody that's a parent, and sometimes I can't deal with those. I want to fix it. I just emotionally can't handle it, and I hand the phone to their dad. But at the end of the day, we can't fix it. We can't fix it. They're adults. And one of my biggest learning with adult children is they just want me to listen. They just want to talk out what their problem is. They want me to listen. And at the end of it, they want me to say, I'm going to pray about that for you. That's all they want. Be there for your adult children. But you're not going to be there for your adult children if you're not there for them when they're little. You have to nurture that now while they're small. And that prayer issue is huge. That's the biggest connection I have to my three children right now, both of us, to our three children. I can't control what Ryan and Yoshi are doing. They live on the other side of the world. They're in a totally different day than we are. And they're going to bed right now to get up to go to work on Monday. Lily's in Europe most of the time. But my connection is prayer.
As the thrust I had when I was going to down to Peru and teaching just different concepts and just talking about money, teach your children about money. Teach your children to link money with labor. How often do we hear from the children, just go to that money machine and get all the money that you want? And I could see the heads nodding in Peru, and all the women were just kind of, yeah, that's where money comes from. This is a great opportunity to teach your children that money doesn't magically appear out of that machine, but it's work, and it's earned through hard work. We can show our children how to work and how to make things and how to sell things. We can show them how work can be meaningful and fun as well as financially profitable. A common mistake we make is indiscriminately doling out money to our children as life goes by. When we give children our money out of our wallet, they're not spending theirs, they're spending yours. This teaches them to think that money comes automatically and easily. And as a result, they disassociate money from work. Eventually, they feel it's their right to have money available when they haven't worked for it. Character is built and lifelong attitudes are forged. Remember, a child cannot learn money management unless he or she has money to manage. And unless they've earned the money themselves, they're spending your money. Teach your children how to save. Children learn the value of money and the discipline of self-control through savings. Help them think of odd jobs that they can accomplish to get their goal, to achieve their goal. If they stick with it, and some may not, spending their money may not be so impulsive. Once they buy something, they will be more likely to take care of it. Teach your children to give and give cheerfully. Show them how a giving heart will help others. And that's what Jesus has taught us to do. And never underestimate the power of your example. There are three ways to teach a child. The first is by example. The second is by example. And the third is by example. Whether consciously or not, we're continuously training our children, engraving our values in them as if it was drawing a stick in wet cement. Children learn most effectively not just what we say, but what we do. Our actions speak louder than words. When it comes to handling money and possessions, we, the parents, are very influential. Sometimes our children will fail to listen to us. Rarely will they fail to imitate us.
And our last point was, teach your children to love Jesus. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. We love the Lord or we wouldn't be here. But the very greatest gift that we can give our children is a heart and a desire to love the Lord. They will make their own decisions as they get older. As we all know, we've all seen it. They get into the teen years. They start to make their own decisions. They get into their 20s. Some do make the decision to walk away. But remember that you have grounded them in faith. You have grounded them in Christ. And that seed will stay in their heart and will grow. I do go back to my first point that every child is different, and some are incredibly, incredibly willful. And I know that because I was one of those children. Your child may wander, but remember, who knows their heart better than you do? And remember who has their stamp. The Lord has his stamp on your child's heart. Pray often with your children. If I could go back and change one thing, that's what it would be. We prayed with our children, but I would pray more. I would have brought more things before the Lord as a parent. You can't ever do that too much. Encourage them to pray aloud. Encourage them to take leadership in your prayer time. Let your children see you humbled before the Lord. Don't be afraid to say you're sorry to them. And don't be afraid for them to see you humbled and asking for forgiveness before the Lord. They will mimic you. McCarrick just said, you can talk and talk and talk, but what they will do is follow your example. We don't get do-overs in any part of our lives. And there's lots of times in my life that I wished I had a do-over. And I don't think there's any do-over more than I wish that some of the things I had said to my children and I had done with my children, those are the do-overs I wish. Take the time with your children. This is the most precious time for them. This is the time to impress on them who Christ is, who Jesus is to them. Make the most of your time, the gift that God gave you, and make the most of it to nurture your child's heart and soul. And that is the greatest gift you can give them. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Pat and Eric, for sharing. So this is one of the reasons why I love our church. Like, if you hadn't heard this, would you know what kind of gifts we have in our midst? And honestly, I think if we took the time to just get to know one another a little bit more, we would recognize what amazing gifts God has given to each one of us. So I'll just close us in prayer. Thank you, guys. Father in heaven, thank you so much for opportunity to be in your house this morning and to hear some wonderful, godly, practical things on how to live our lives. Father, we ask that as we go this week, that we would remember the things we've heard, that we would remember, Lord, that you are with us. In everything that we're doing, every word that we say, you walk with us and you love us. We thank you so much, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.